This is another episode of the Decoding Purpose podcast. My name is Rebecca Tapp, and in every episode of Decoding Purpose, we speak to humans of both influence and impact to explore how life's turning points help us to decode purpose and to ignite a more meaningful and purpose-driven life. Welcome to another episode of the Decoding Purpose podcast. Today's guest is an author whose book I came across while scrolling through a LinkedIn page titled The Business of Purpose, a really great resource for anyone who loves decoding purpose like me. The title of that book was The Gift of Crisis. The book cover features a glittering jewel that caught my eye, and when I zoned in on the content, I just knew I needed to track down the author. And that brings me to today's guest who beamed in all the way from Luzerne in Switzerland, the incredible Christos Solkos. Now, The Gift of Crisis was only released in February of this year, and I stumbled upon it a few weeks later. As the saying goes, timing is everything. See, when the bushfires hit, I thought that was the turning point of 2020. How wrong was I? And we all know the rest. What I will say is, if a crisis is a gift, this year will be like all of our Christmases coming at once. Christos was the managing director of large multinationals in Southern Europe and Eastern Europe for more than a decade. And over that time, he experienced significant crisis and gained insights into what it takes to lead with certainty when the world is anything but certain. Today, he is an independent advisor working with established companies and startups to improve innovation and growth, injecting a broader purpose into their business model. Innovation that, off the back of the current climate, has never been more important. For any leaders looking to navigate these crazy times, looking for some advice from someone who has truly walked their talk, this is your book and this is your interview. The Gift of Crisis is a roadmap of proven in-practice steps for all organisations to properly use any crisis to reset and redefine their purpose and business model, align their stakeholders and society, and use innovation and technology to grow exponentially and help the planet become a better home. Welcome to the Decoding Purpose podcast, Christos Solkos.
Thank you for inviting me, Rebecca. I mean, this is it's a highly intellectual space, as I understand, with a very like-minded audience. So it's a pleasure.
Oh, and we are honoured to have you. Now, Christos, I'm going to kick off with a question that I ask every single guest on the Decoding Purpose podcast, and that is whether you think that the discovery of our purpose is an intentional decision, or is the discovery of our purpose a type of fate or destiny?
Purpose, your meaning and impact to the world can be discovered, I think, in both ways, in many ways. It can be an intentional journey, facilitated by externalities, maybe assisted sometimes through counseling, sometimes can be also a destiny. It happens somewhere, someone, that, life gives us a wake-up call, and throws us unexpected obstacles and opportunities also. Some obstacles are called crises and can help us or maybe force us to go deeper and discover what is that really matters. So then you need to go back to your drawing board and refine or maybe rewrite your purpose. And what results is usually more authentic and in line what you or your organization, need to do. It can also be a eureka moment. Sometimes through a sense of purpose cannot feel authentic, because it's cooked up in a lab, which is, you know, it's also, it's okay. I cannot blame anyone for this. I think it's important to work hard at determining, articulating, and sort of operating with a sense of purpose. And for sure, you need in that case to use your system two thinking, as Daniel Kahneman would say. You know, cognitive, at the end of the day, it's a cognitive exercise, in my view, that needs programming.
Yeah, I love that answer. And my favorite part about that is the idea that purpose is something that can evolve and that can sharpen through life's experiences. And I very much resonate with that. And I do have some questions about that later in the podcast. However, while on the subject of fate, I was really interested to discover that you released your book, which is titled The Gift of Crisis, in February. And it's almost like you predicted what was about to happen in the world. Have you reflected on that timing since?
Yeah, it was actually very, very funny because, you know, I'm working on this book for the last 5 years. By that time, you know, 5 years ago, very few people would use the word purpose as everybody uses this word today. Mm. So it started as a collection of, stories from my life and then, you know, some blogging material with the intention to just tell a story, you know, nothing more than that. And it evolved through the years with research, stories of others, a kind of framework and the how-to concept that, you know, it was developed. But I was delaying and I was feeling that this word purpose is gradually becoming a cliche. And, I took the decision to go live last summer. I could not wait anymore. And then I started the publishing project, which is quite a hard and quite difficult project. Mm. Now, accidentally, the process delayed and the book was aired in such a moment. So it was all by coincidence, serendipity, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, I could not imagine or anticipate the scale, scope, or speed of the crisis that we face now. And I think my own crisis experiences sort of helped me to understand that things can change dramatically, unexpectedly, and very, very fast. So, for example, when I spent some time in chapter 7 of my book that, I was trying to imagine, as I call them, level 1 problems or crises that could impact the business or society today, it was not difficult at all to see that a pandemic or a, social injustice or economic inequality was just, in front of our door. Mm. I mean, also you could throw climate change, right? And then the question becomes what do you do about it, or how as organizations or societies, what could we have done before? And then you go to the idea that you should have prepared contingency plans or alternative scenarios, etc. But I think beyond that, crisis and disruptions shows us that how important leadership is and the fundamental function of that leadership mm. is to help us come together in a common purpose. I think we've seen this kind of leadership here and there, but also, to be honest, it's been strikingly missing in many places, mm. right? For most part, leaders now, as I see them, they're thinking tactically, which is very, of course, necessary, right? But not in terms of vision or purpose.
Mm. Which is interesting because, I think purpose is an anchor in uncertainty. It's the one thing that can give us a sense of certainty. So as you're saying, whilst the tactical side of operations is crucial in a crisis, you still need to be able to give people a reason to get up every day and go through it.
Yeah, that's true.
So Christos, this season 2, of the podcast, I actually themed around turning points. And my reason for that is because whether it's by choice or by a crisis, I believe that our purpose is more than often discovered in these turning points, which I guess is another way of saying that there, you know, that there is a gift in crisis, just like the title of your book. Now, I'm sure you are aware that at this exact moment in time, we are all experiencing not only, you know, COVID-19, but we're also witnessing the Black Lives Matter protests unfold globally on the back of George Floyd's deaths in Minneapolis. When I was doing a little bit of research for this podcast, I noted that you had also experienced scenes that very much resembled what we are seeing play out today while you were living in the Ukraine in 2013, 2014. Can you share with me your memories of that particular experience personally, but also as a professional, given you were in a leadership position for a multinational company going through that period of time?
Sure. I think human beings, we are very, very adaptable to the reality animals. You know, we are designed to find ways to thrive and survive within any context that we live. And these contexts sometimes can become very comfortable, even when it's not desirable, you know. And along the way, we develop assumptions and patterns of behavior that lead us to accept the context and inhibit us from any, you know, tendency to examine further and probing. So that's why crisis, as rightfully said, it's a gift, and it reveals the current context, and for whatever reason, this is no longer sustainable, and pushes us to change. Mm. Now, for me, I was a very typical manager at that point of my career, you know, with tangible objectives, and for my business and career as well. And, you know, maybe I was a little bit more curious and impatient, you know, with the status quo, you know. But then it came the crisis, and I needed to reevaluate everything about the business, about my role, about myself, and in order to become what I and we as a team needed to get through, I had to change. But, you know, personally, I like turning points. Intuitively, I have learned in my life to detect actually those kinds of points. And when they come, and depending on the situation, I either increase the bet or I pass and, you know, wait for the good times to come. For me, it's some sort of intellectual gambling. You know, I call it return of luck. So it is what you have to do during this period of time in order to maximize your returns. And this is why all these turning points for me really matter, and redefine who I really am. And and at the end of the day, that's a gift.
And I mean, when you think specifically back to that point in time, what really stands out in your mind with regards to how you created an effective leadership strategy for your people whilst dealing with the protests and everything that was going on in the Ukraine? Do you have any one particular memory or moment that stands out for you?
Yeah, I think if I go back all these years, we were observing events that were escalating, and how it happened is, in parallel we had started the process of redefining our norms as a management team, as a team there in the organization I was leading. And actually the next step for us was to train ourselves in a moment of crisis. So this was what would be let's say, the suggestion of our coach, of our kind of team coach. And funny enough, we didn't have to do any exercise. We just had to live the real life because the events were exploded, you know, and we had to very, very fast connect ourselves and put together a crisis team. And with an agile process, learning very fast and changing plans, adapting, thinking, and you know, evaluating trigger points, we achieved to first of all create a common purpose as a team, and then come through this crisis very successful afterwards. So. I think the critical moment is the decision that you're not alone. You have a team, you have a group of people that you know, they share the same ideas and they want to go forward the same way. And you just do it. You find the courage and the determination to do it.
So, Christos, I want to, I guess, jump back before going forward and talking in more detail about the connection between crisis and purpose. However, as you know, we've just been discussing, you were working for a major multinational who just happened to be Philip Morris International, which is why you were working in the Ukraine. And for those of you who maybe don't know, Philip Morris is a cigarette company. So, you, at that time, obviously learnt a lot about purpose on the backdrop of a crisis. But what I found even more interesting was when I took a closer look at your LinkedIn profile, I actually clicked through to the Philip Morris page and was surprised to see that the mission statement said this: we are designing a smoke-free future. Now, I found this so interesting simply because we have a company here that has chosen to pivot with a purpose that steers directly away from the product they sell for the greater good. I have two questions here. Can you talk me through what prompted the brand and product pivot and what role purpose played in that transformation?
Sure, sure. First of all, you know, Philip Morris, just as a general disclaimer, for me and for many others, I think it's a great school of learning and a superior employer, right? So yeah. just to begin. Now, like any other tobacco company, they primarily produce a product that kills its users to a high proportion. Yep. Okay. Now, of course, consumers know it and they continue because they are addicted, and or they like using it, right? Which is it is an oxymoron, right? Because how can you care about your customers if you end up killing them? Now, obviously, the elephant is in the room. However, innovation, you know, technology, science, and you know, all of the, you know, R&D activity in those companies, especially Philip Morris, was by and large focused in the last decades on the development of less harmful or, if possible, 100% safe products. Now, a new product at some point was discovered, tested very well, achieved great level of consumer acceptance, and within 2-3 months, maybe the biggest decision in a 100-year company history was taken. So to jump on this boat, which, as you read, it's called a smoke-free future, with a purpose to persuade smokers to convert into less harmful choices, if not quitting at all. So this was a transformative moment for the company, right? It changed morale and enthusiasm and you know, the talent and the work, and of course, restaged or trying to restage the company as a less seen one. So that's the story, you know, behind what you read about Philip Morris, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing I find interesting in this story, regardless of the company or what they sell, is the power of the narrative flip, how storytelling can really completely flip the direction of an organisation. You know, it's very powerful for a cigarette company to say we're creating a smoke-free future. As an example, you know, in your experience with regards to purpose in business, how do you view the role of storytelling?
Yeah, actually, you know, my natural, let's say, my instant reaction to this is that, you know, telling is absolutely essential part of any story, right? So it's if you have a story, you need to tell the story. So especially during turning points. Mm. You know, I was, when I was in Ukraine, my coach, Phil Harkins, was assigned as as I told you before, as a team mentor for the management team, was insisting in the stories. We are exchanging among ourselves and the stories that will be remembered afterwards and transferred to the organization, to the ones after us. And, you know, I think stories and the storytelling are watering, if you like, the purpose tree. Mm. It can give you a picture, right? In, you know, I remember a short one in the middle of the crisis. I was seriously thinking that there is a possibility of invasion from Russia. So one night I woke up in full sweating with sounds of explosions, right? Mm. And I thought they were bombing us. So I was panicked. I went to the window, and it was, you know, it was so funny. It was some fireworks from the opposite building. So it's a very small story I described in my book as well, and out of many. And I'm telling this story, you know, in full consciousness of our common purpose during these times, which was, in essence, whatever it takes, we do. Even above and beyond any company policy to keep our people intact, you know. Purpose definition and journey, if you like, without storytelling is dry and dull. So that's my opinion.
Mm. And when it comes to turning points, often the most significant turning points are the ones that personally affect us. And I know you did get to a point where you felt out of alignment working for a big tobacco company. Do you remember the moment where you felt your personal purpose shift, leading you to kind of take a leap into the world of becoming a business advisor and an innovation expert?
Sure, of course. You know, I call these moments crucibles, and it's your turning moments, yeah. And especially in the corporate environment. Yeah, and you know, in a corporate environment, you need to regularly check your happiness barometer, so it reflects your inner self. And as an expert of your own self, you need to make judgment calls. I think this was exactly what happened in my case. You know, you feel, imagine that you are in a house, in a professional house with four walls, which are sort of restrictive. I mean, no matter how expensive is the wooden furniture and, you know, the lavish dinners that you enjoy, you might not be aligned with a sense of freedom and sharing, you know, with the world without restrictions, policies, or geographies. So I think the feeling that you're having when you do this leap of faith, let's call it, it's like before you are accessing 5% of the world, let's say, and after, the whole world is visible and at arm length reach, you know. Mm. So, you know, for these crucibles, I think you need to make frequent checks and continuously reconciliating your dilemmas, you know, because in my books, life is a tree of yeses and nos branches. So you never know how would you end if in a given crossroad your answer was yes instead of a no. So, then, support whatever any decision you take, you know, close the book and then start a new one. Mm. So that's that's the way it happens.
Yeah, look, I love your description. And again, I resonate with it purely because I think often people can think of purpose as being like the North Star. And I'm not saying that that definition is wrong, but when you think of the North Star, you think of it as being something that is out there in front of you and guiding you, where I think on a personal level, sometimes purpose is like the North Star becomes something that is inside of you. It's that internal compass and that part of you that knows when something has come to an end or what direction you need to go. Or, you know, you're talking about the yes or no tree. Well, when do I say yes and when do I say no? That's something that very much sits inside of us, not outside of us.
Sure. It is purely, I think, it's internal. The drive is inside.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So I know that a core area of passion for you is in decoding the business case for purpose, and that you have spent a considerable amount of time researching the intersection between organisations that disrupt or redesign, to refer to your framework, and their inherent connection to a globally focused purpose. These same companies who sit in this sweet spot also happen to be the most profitable. So my question for you today is why is that so?
Well, for a number of reasons, consumers today are not buying promise of performance or dream or luxury only. You know, the world is open to a big degree, transparent and accessible. It's fast, and the knowledge is very fast. And the knowledge has been replaced with search. So even, if you think about it, almost every anomaly is visible. You know, the problems people have are aggregating into serious, as I call them, global one problems, into global problems, right? Global issues. And so they need institutions and companies to find solutions to them, to these problems. So then they buy the solutions. So they consume or work happily for companies that offer not just performance or style, but purpose too. For that reason. So my simple definition, just as a parenthesis of purpose, is the impact our product or service has to people's lives. Mm. Not just customers, employees, or stakeholders, you know, but community, society at scale, you know, maybe the whole planet. And then, you know, the loftiness of their purpose dictates the space in which purpose-driven companies play. So the depth of purpose and whether this is incorporated into the business model, which is critical for me, together with an innovation space they select to play, to operate, can make all the difference and can lead to disruption, exponential growth, and profitability. You know, these days, especially increasingly, people had actually the chance to reflect and understand their deepest needs. And I guess, those needs are to live in a world that it's healthier, more positive, more connected, more sustainable, more meaningful. So businesses at the end of the day that align with that have almost limitless potential for growth, because those needs are met and you can just keep moving, innovating to fill them.
Mm. So, Christos, in the context of the global recession, do you think that this trend will continue to build momentum? And when I say trend, you know, when I think about purpose-driven companies and the purpose economy at large, as in conscious consumerism, it often is more expensive. And so do you think people will still have a focus on purpose in terms of how they consume within the context of a global recession? Or do you think that this is something that might fall away?
I think it's something that will keep being as a fundamental part of our life and our businesses.
Yeah.
Simply because there is a now with all this with COVID madness. You know, this is the opportunity to prove that what does it mean expensive, right?
Mm.
What is cheap? You know, the world is changing, and I mean, if you think about. Take a moment and think about COVID impact on work and this trend of we stay at home and how radically industries will change, you know?
Yeah.
Office spaces, real estate, transportation, gas, cars, taxis, education, you know? A lot of universities will shut down, you know, for good. So it's a whole world where this notion of cheap or expensive is going to be redistributed, right? So in a way, what we discovered as human beings, as societies, and as organizations is going to be the base of the new economy, if you like.
Yeah.
So no, all this.
About turning points, this is a really interesting one from my perspective. Will this turning point fundamentally shift capitalism and this idea that we continually need to grow, create more, want more, and do that in a way that's not sustainable for the planet?
Well, in my kind of research and in the book, you know, I've summarized the three global problems, as I call them, level one problems, as distraction of the planet, right? Which includes all the environment and the second is injustice, inequality, you know, because if this continues, the world is unsustainable. You know, I was some years ago a boss, actually a very wise boss I had in my career, was telling me that it doesn't matter how high you build the wall, and you know, imagine that you're rich, you know, and outside the wall are poor people sitting, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter how high the wall is. Poor people will find a way to jump in. So inequality, injustice is such a big issue that we need to resolve. And this might lead to, you know, ideas like redistribution of wealth, this idea of the global minimum income. So I think these things are going to happen. And, you know, and the third issue that I see is health and longevity of people, and how we're going to make sure that people live more and they live in better terms. So planet and whatever is connected with this, human lives and injustice, inequality, for me are the three problems that the modern capitalism, if you like, need to address.
Yeah, look, I think it's a really interesting time, and I think it'll be really interesting to see what new script is created on the back of this, because if anything has highlighted the issues that you've just put forward, it is COVID-19 and also what is happening now with regards to the protests as well. It's put these issues front and centre. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next on that front.
Sure.
Now, Christos, I am diving around a little bit here, but I want to come back into organisational purpose just for a moment. In your opinion, what are the differences between personal purpose, i.e. the purpose of your employees as individuals, and organisational purpose?
Yeah. Well, everyone has a personal purpose, right? So whether they've discovered that or not, I mean, that, you know, may not be aligned completely with the organization's purpose, right? In fact, often they are completely out of line, right? So it's the responsibility of the individual, in my view, within their power, of course, to determine what matters to them and discover ways of expressing or living that within their work, you know, small or large. And on the other end, it's the responsibility of the organization to articulate its purpose truthfully. So people, including customers and partners, can sign on to that deliberately, and the organization can be held accountable afterwards. So the value then is self-explanatory. So you get more committed employees, more engaged customers, more word of mouth, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it comes both ways.
Yeah. Right? And look, given you have headed up massive multinational companies, is there a way, you know, when you've got, say, 20,000 staff or whatever, a huge amount, is there a way for an organization to create an alignment between a person's individual purpose and the organizational purpose? Like, is that possible?
Yeah, I think yes. And of course, the more alignment, the better, right?
Yeah.
And for that reason, I love startups. And I think there, I mean, if large corporations are taking the example of the startups, they can gain a lot, right? So startups, they usually start with a sense of purpose. So let's fix this big problem and make the world a better place. It's sort of a romantic, right? And, you know, of course, they don't go to invent usually a new gadget because they know that probably an established company would eat them, you know, with a simple solution. So they're usually more emotional and meaningful startups, you know, and the founders and the first employers are usually very, if not completely, aligned with that purpose. And that gives them resiliency.
Yeah, fortitude, there's a superpower to that.
You know,
yeah,
exactly. Determination to go all of these through challenges and innovate and pivot to survive.
And I mean, being in a startup is not easy. It can be a hard road, so you need that.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, if they achieve, you know, to be aligned you know, behind this sense of purpose, it can be so powerful and it can be part of their DNA. Think about you know, companies that are moving like startups, even big ones, and, you know, they are evolving and changing. Think about today, Apple versus IBM, you know, you know, how companies can change, reform, but, you know, continue keeping this DNA.
And I mean, what's your advice on that note? Because if I think about a startup and purpose, it's much easier for a startup to have purpose because they're building the organization bottoms up with that purpose as the foundation. But if you take, you know, a big existing corporate organization, it's very hard to turn a big ship. So how do you embed purpose within an organization that's never had it? Because that's quite a different mentality to start up. But from what I'm hearing, from what you're sharing with me, there is a way to embed that startup mentality within an existing organization.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I agree with you, but to a big extent, I think you can at least try. And what I would do is and what I advise, you know, also, you know, people to do is first of all to start with why do they really exist beyond the money, you know, beyond the transactional part of the business.
Yeah,
big companies, right? And
yep. What's embed the transformation that over the transaction?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Embed that into their operating model. Then it's going to be believable, transferable. It works, you know, as a spark. It works as a you know, it can bring the organization into a positive fire, you know, and then people are behind this idea. And they start spreading around, and they work happily for this company. They know why they work there, why they need to make this company great.
So today we are here to decode purpose and crisis. And, you know, we were just having a chat before about the organisations who disrupt. And I think it's fair to say that for any organisation who is innovating at that level, they need to get really comfortable with the unknown. You know, they need to be okay about taking risks. So, you know, this idea also got me thinking about how a crisis in some ways creates the same conditions, in that in a crisis we're also being asked to respond to uncertainty. In both scenarios, purpose is what becomes the anchor. So with that in mind, in your opinion, why does innovation happen in the intersection between purpose and uncertainty?
I think that's a fantastic idea, and it's absolutely true. Innovation is at the intersection of these two things, purpose and uncertainty. You know, sometimes that uncertainty is fast moving and destructive. It's like a crisis, but sometimes also it can be, you know, less obvious. You know, when for example, an evolving market comes, and when a technology becomes obsolete. Think about the Kodak moment, right? Mm-hmm. So purpose in that case gives you the directional sense of how to navigate that uncertainty, right? What do we need to do here and why, right? What will it mean to us and to others? That's why crisis is a gift. It forces the work. It speeds up things. You know, the much harder thing is to evolve and innovate when things are still good, right? So, how do you get people's attention? How do you galvanize or manufacture
the
agency?
Which kind of brings me that was kind of my next question is can you take what you know about a crisis, those conditions, and almost recreate it as a tool to disrupt when we're in business as usual?
Yes, indeed. Because what you need to do is to create compassion. You know, compassion is at the heart of shared purpose. You know, it's really about connecting and helping each other survive and thrive. You know, have this meaningful and engaging environment and self-development and support. I think the ultimate purpose is around personal and collective growth, you know, and connection along the journey, which is changing. Think how people get so attached to each other through work and shared experiences. You know, the best teams bring that to surface openly. Of course, it takes vulnerability and courage, because it's always scary, and it's easier to hide your needs and your feelings. So I think compassion is key into this equation.
Yeah, I love that. I was actually reading an article that you wrote earlier this year in response to the COVID-19 crisis, and I absolutely loved a paragraph, and you spoke about this earlier in the conversation, where you said purpose is something that evolves, that if a purpose is stale, a crisis will expose it. Can you talk me through this idea in more detail? Because I do think often people think of purpose as this like unchanging force in our lives, but I also agree that purpose does, you know, 100% it evolves due to the environment. What has been your direct experience of this, and what insights have you gained?
Yeah, as I told you before, I think there are moments that we go back to the drawing boards, right? And we redefine our purpose. This doesn't mean that all the previous work that we did, you know, goes wasted, right? So think about you know, it's living purpose is like a muscle or a discipline that's being enhanced with practice. So even though purpose is such a long and long term and almost directional vector, ironically, you must be ready to let go, right, and adapt and respond to new demands. And you know, every step of this adaptation process, it gets us closer to our deepest truth. Mm. You know, let me give an example. How many companies have you seen in writing in their kind of mission and vision statements before that safety and well-being of employees are part of their kind of mission or vision before COVID?
Yeah,
right? The same happens with supply chain.
So yeah, I mean, how it's many a standard, of them, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's standard. You know, supply chain, right? Same thing. So you need to be flexible. You know, whatever is flexible bends. It adapts and survives. So I think however painful that may be, the better we get at that, the better we navigate life and we succeed.
Yeah. No, I love that. It's like the, you know, peeling away the layers of the onion to continue to, you know, this podcast is called Decoding Purpose, but it's like we're always on that mission. We're always decoding what that purpose is, whether it's personal or organizational, and that is the process of evolution. So I love that.
Yes, sure.
So in researching for this interview, I also noticed that you refer to crisis as being a galvanizing force. So the one thing we haven't spoken in much detail about today is the creation of shared purpose, and it seems that crisis is something that really ignites that. What have you learned about teams and the creation of shared purpose through crisis?
Well, I think purpose is a great moment for a team because the team has to be put together, right? I mean, you cannot face a crisis moment alone. It's impossible, right? And especially for teams, you need to discover the hidden qualities of your team members. You need to be open to advices or, you know, information that is coming from anywhere, you know, from everybody. There's nobody that you have to neglect. And, you know, I remember, and I'm using this example quite frequently, the moments back in Ukraine where we were sharing experiences almost every day, and we're calling this period tent time, you know, that the team is below, inside an imaginary kind of tent, and at the end of the day, they are sharing what happened and what they learned, and this grows you, and you know, personal growth and collective growth as a team is what matters most. I mean, what consists, you know, success, and you discover after the crisis how bigger your team has become, how the skills have evolved, you know, how these individuals can take, you know, positions of bigger responsibility, how they can be better persons, you know, in their mm-hmm. personal life. So I think teams are one of the best, let's say, elements that you gain through a crisis experience.
Christos, I know that we've spoken a lot about innovation today, but it wouldn't be a conversation about innovation unless we also highlighted the exponential impact of technology. What role do you think that data and emerging technologies will play in influencing the creation of a better world?
Yeah, I think we are very fortunate that this crisis arrived, the COVID crisis arrived now, right? Imagine, even 10 years ago, if we didn't have the digital capabilities of today, right? No Zoom meetings, no distance learning and education.
Hard to comprehend, isn't it?
Yeah. No televisits.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I mean, even here in Australia at the moment, we've all downloaded COVID-19 apps to sort of track where we're going and whether we're around people who've been potentially sick and all of that sort of thing. I won't go into all of that, but even looking at the use of technology at that level.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, no capacity to inform, trace, track, right?
Yeah.
So now almost everybody in this planet carries a device, you know, that didn't really exist, you know, 20 years ago. And I think in going forward, we're going to see huge change in healthcare and, you know, wearables and monitoring device. I think that, you know, many industries were already facing massive disruption, and all that has been accelerated, you know, by COVID crisis. So the urgency for change is very clear. The ones who get it, I mean, they will thrive, right? They and you know, in all this sense, the common purpose, it's extremely important. You know, some countries like my original country, Greece, exhibited phenomenal pace of digitalization and use of data in days. Without the crisis, the same change would have taken decades, right? So I think data and technology are absolutely key into this matter.
So I've arrived at my final question for the day. If you reflect on your personal, professional or collective experiences of a crisis, what is it about crisis for you that rips away all of the illusions or, you know, the false beliefs that ask us to accept a deeper truth or a new truth? Now, you know, I know this is a big question, but it's one I keep asking myself, especially in response to climate change as an example, and now also what we have seen with COVID-19. Why do you think it takes a crisis for us to ignite change, even if we could have changed by choice before that crisis?
Yeah, I think here it comes your very nice picture of the onion and I'm peeling the onion. And I think the gradual elimination of comfort levels leads to your deepest truth. You know, all fallacies, biases, misbeliefs are coming up, right?
Yeah.
It is the space where existential questions kick in. And I can give you, as an example, a severe crisis with alcoholism, right? So in this 12-step program that, you know, AAs are using, they have this concept which is called a rock bottom. It's the point when the life you're living, all, you know, the behaviors, your patterns, they are no longer sustainable. So you can't fool yourself anymore. So you're stripped down to the most honest truth, who I am. Right? What kind of person I want to be? Do I have the willingness to change? What do I want? And you might not even have to answer to, you know, you don't have the answers to all these questions, but asking questions by itself, honestly and truthfully, is the biggest benefit. And this is the motivation to change. And this kind of change leads to something better and more fulfilling, more true. Right now, the world may be at the kind of a rock bottom, maybe, you know, and there are probably many different ways we can go and still survive. But we also have an enormous, perhaps unprecedented opportunity to make things better. You know, me personally, you know, I would take it. You know, let's be better. You know, let's build something better.
Absolutely. Well, Christos, you certainly are a human being who is actively creating a more peaceful, a more abundant future for all of us in sharing your wisdoms with the world. So thank you for your purpose on this planet.
Thank you for having me, Rebecca. Thank you for the kind words.
You are more than welcome. And I know you've got up nice and early there in Luzern, Switzerland. So I also appreciate that. Look, before we end the podcast, if we're wanting to buy your book, The Gift of Crisis, or even, you know, learn a little bit more about your world, I know your website was full of some great resources. Where do we go to visit you online?
Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, and all the, you know, online bookstores. I mean, you can find my book easily.
Excellent. And I'm
having also an audio version. It's christostsolkas.com.
Perfect. And that's Solkas with a T. T-S-O-L-K-A-S, just to clarify.
That's correct.
Amazing. Well, look, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the Decoding Purpose podcast. Hopefully we can get you back again in the future.
Thank you, Rebecca. All the best.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast. If you have enjoyed the podcast, please take a moment to leave us a review. That would be greatly appreciated. And we'd also love you to join the Purpose Movement at Instagram by following us at Decoding Purpose Podcast. Also, a big shout out to our sponsors at Supernova Sound.